Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today's Tuesday, December 29th. Hi, Kelsey.
Hello.
And we're back from the Christmas holiday. Barely back.
We are. Yes, yeah. It feels great.
It's hard to work on the week before between Christmas and New Year's.
Isn't it?
But what the hell? You know, we've been off for a week. I felt, you know, I missed the radio.
Me too.
I missed the microphone.
Me too.
So you went back home to Texas.
I did.
And so you left when, Tuesday?
Tuesday, yes, it was. So yeah. a week from
So you went today. for a week.
I did, much. About 6 days. Yeah. So it was great to see everybody. And my little niece, Kaylee, is getting so big. She's almost walking, actually. She's 10 months old. So
really?
Yeah. So really, really cute to watch her grow.
Yeah.
I've never seen
and
that
this
before.
Is a daughter of your sister?
Yes. Oh, my older sister, Juliana.
Awesome.
That's her baby.
And so so you get to see the niece, right?
Yeah.
And that's cool because they grow so fast that every time you go away, she probably changes, right?
Exactly. Every time it's different. She's, you know, starting to say little bitty words now, we think. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just imagining.
Right.
Because we're wanting her to say words, but maybe it's just babble. I don't know. But she definitely said, uh-oh.
Really?
And bye, I believe. So, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. She's so cute.
Wow,
so.
I love kids.
Me
They're
too.
They're great, you know. Are you planning on having any?
I don't know.
I haven't decided yet.
It's really funny because growing up, I always thought I was, you know, kind of weird because all of my friends were, you know, planning to have kids from such a young age. And I thought, oh, with time, things will get clearer for me. And I'm sure age will, you know, change my mind or help me make up my mind. And it just really hasn't.
Yeah. Well, you're still young, you know. I mean, you're probably not at an age where, I mean, you're just now building your career and everything, right?
Right. And I like to think I have a good 15 years of baby making in me. So I think that, that
no
I have some
rush,
time.
Right?
Right. Exactly.
Right. Good for you. So, I mean, do you envision, when you envision a family, do you envision a big one or just one kid, two kids, or like 10?
What do I? Definitely not 10. I don't know, maybe a couple.
Yeah, I think a couple is enough.
Yeah, I think so too. Any more than that is
it's too much.
Right. I agree. But, you know, I don't really think about that much. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where my life goes because I haven't made up my mind to have kids yet. I don't really see that in my future.
You're not ready yet. I mean, when I was... You're 26, right?
26, yes.
26.
Yes.
When I was 26, I was not thinking of kids. And then sure enough, a year later, I got married, right? At 27.
Right.
So you never know.
Right, yes.
So, and that was funny because at that time, I had come out of a long relationship and I thought, I'm not getting married till I'm 30.
Right.
Right? And then you meet someone and... You know, I think I married for the wrong reasons. I don't know.
Really?
You know, I wanted the family to be happy and, you know, everything else. You got, you know, I mean, all I can say is when you get married for one reason only. And that's when you feel you can't be with that person. I mean, when you feel you can't not be with that person.
Can't be without them.
Right, exactly. You can't be without them for the rest of your life, that you really want to be with them.
Yeah.
You know, because otherwise, any other reason is like, it's not for you, you know, it's for somebody else.
Right.
You know, if you're like, oh, it's getting late, I should have kids and all that stuff. These are bad reasons.
Very bad reasons.
If you don't love the person, truly love them to the point where they don't get on your nerves, you know, then you should definitely marry them. But otherwise, don't waste your time. It's not going to happen. You know, it's just, there's got to be a connection.
I agree. That's a good philosophy.
And you have to be, and you have to be ready mentally, not because other people are telling you or pressuring you to get married.
Right. That happens a lot.
It does, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I felt a lot of pressure at that time. And, you know, so I met a nice Jewish girl and everything. The families got along. Okay. And I figured, okay, well, the pressure's on now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but one question was I ready to be married? And I don't think I was.
Right. It's funny how times have changed, too.
Yeah.
And how the older generation are... I think some of them are still having trouble grasping the fact that it's just not the same as it used to be.
Right.
I mean, a long time ago, and it's different in different geographical locations as well.
That's true.
I mean, in the big city, people wait longer.
Right.
And, you know, it's no big deal to get married at 30 or 35. I mean, that's perfect.
Right. It's not too late then.
Right. Whereas back home in the South and... you know, Texas in particular, people get married a lot sooner.
A lot younger, right?
Yes. And
well,
you know,
good that you got out of there in time.
I know. And a lot of my friends from high school have kids and they're married, and which is great if that works for them.
Yeah.
But I have a lot left to do in my
life. Awesome. Yeah, don't rush it all. In a few minutes, we're going to have a guest calling in. We're going to be talking about Alzheimer's today. How do you say it?
Alzheimer's?
Alzheimer's, right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, Alzheimer's.
We'll have to ask the expert, but I believe that's what it is.
I think that's how it's pronounced, Alzheimer's.
That kind of hits home for me as well. I've had some grandparents suffer from Alzheimer's. So.
Really? Oh, wow. That's terrible.
It is terrible, and it's...
All the stuff that people suffer from, you know? I mean, my dad has Parkinson's, and I'm watching him die silent. I mean,
slowly.
You know, and I mean, we don't really want to think about death yet. He's not really close, but you can tell that, you know, he's able to use his body less and less.
Right.
Man, it's so hard to deal with. I can't even tell you. I don't want to think about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like it's in front of you, you know.
In any case, it's hard to watch someone you love.
Exactly. When
like
you
that.
Used to see them all strong and, you know, and everything in charge.
Yeah.
And now you do everything for them, you know.
And the thing about Alzheimer's, too, when it gets to where you, I don't, you know, I'm not a doctor, obviously, but from just what I've seen and what I've experienced, you know, you lose your mind. You don't remember people. You don't remember anything. And it's just heartbreaking because.
I know.
It's just, you're not looking at the person you've known your whole life.
Yeah.
It's just somebody totally different or, you know, lack thereof. And it's heartbreaking.
It really is, you know, because I think what makes us is our memories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, imagine if you get up one day and you don't remember anything. Who are you then? You know, I mean,
right.
You know, so I think so I think memory is really important for identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're saying. You know, once you forget who you are, or who other people are, you're lost.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll see. We'll find out more from him. I find it to be fascinating because I think a lot of people have it, you know.
And maybe they're coming up with some kind of cure or something to slow the process at least.
Yeah.
I know that they're constantly working on that. So it'll be interesting to hear from him
what
he's got going on.
Exactly. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about. They're working on it and everything. So, So now... Texas had a tornado and storms and stuff. Was that close to you at all?
You know what?
I mean, Texas is huge,
it
right?
It is huge. It wasn't close to me. It was in the Dallas area, which is quite far from San Antonio. But we did get this insane brush of cold air and nasty weather that I was not ready for.
Really?
I didn't pack for it. I don't even think I own clothes that, that would equip me for that kind of inclement weather anymore. But... it was pretty miserable.
It's been pretty cold here. I mean, how cold are you talking about?
Oh, it got down into the 30s.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and not only that, but the wind chill was
excruciating. Yeah, the wind will kill you, you know, with that cold.
Yes, and we have a bunch of horses on the ranch, and so my little sister Brooke and I had to go out and blanket them whenever it dropped down below a certain degree.
Really? Wow.
And it was just miserable. We had to go get the blankets out of the barn, and it was just windy and rainy and ugh.
Oh my God.
So yes.
Wow, the things you gotta do, you know.
Right.
I know. It's been dry and cold here too. And windy.
Okay,
but,
dry.
You know,
how about
the low
dry?
40s, yeah.
My skin is like a crocodile.
I know, right?
It's crazy. It's never like that.
So I know.
It's exceptionally dry.
I know. It's gotten like that, and it's crazy, you know. But they're talking about the El Nino phenomenon affecting all this and creating all these storms. Mm-hmm. And we might have a pretty wet winter, if that's the truth.
That's what they say. Yeah. I think that that would be kind of a nice change of pace. I should be careful what I wish for.
Well,
I've heard flooding in L.A. is pretty bad because of all the concrete.
Yeah, mudslides and stuff. Yeah, you have a lot of houses located right on the hills and on the edge of the hills, you know, on the slopes.
Mm-hmm.
And these people are crazy for living up there. But we could definitely use the rain. I think it would be nice to have it. But you're right. I think we're going to get more than we want.
Right.
Like if I remember the last El Nino in 97, nobody forgets that one. That was a pretty rainy winter for us. Yeah. So we'll see, you know. And sometimes too much of a good thing is not good either, right?
I know. Yeah. I know. So fingers crossed that doesn't happen. But some rain would be nice for sure.
Yeah. So San Antonio doesn't get storms or anything?
Oh, they do. Yes.
Really?
That's one thing I kind of miss about living in LA, actually, are the thunderstorms.
Really?
Those
are fun.
They are. And just hearing the thunder and seeing the lightning and the rain on the roof and everything is really nice. And we don't really get much of that here.
No, we don't get a lot of weather.
But San Antonio does from time to time. But we didn't get anything like Dallas did with this cold front that came through last week. It was bad up there.
Yeah, that was crazy, man. I mean, tornadoes and stuff. How many? They said 69 tornadoes have touched down in 1 week. Wow.
My gosh. Well, you know, the little town where I'm from, Hondo, we actually had a few tornadoes. It was a long time ago. I think it was back in like early 2000s. And I remember it was really crazy and it was pretty isolated and it was only in Hondo and it made big news headlines and a bunch of houses were destroyed and it was pretty sad. So luckily nothing happened to my home or where we lived, but I had a few friends who had some damage. So that was rough. They can be pretty gnarly little things.
Oh, wow. So in all the commotion and stuff, did you get a chance to see Star Wars at all?
Oh gosh, I didn't.
Do you have any desire to see it?
No.
No, not really.
Well, you know what? Okay.
At least it's an honest answer.
I know, and the reason I say that is because my mom and my little sister and I watched the original Star Wars.
Oh, you did.
So that we would
Sort of know what's going on.
Right. Because I've heard it's a, you know, it's kind of a continuation and you need to kind of know what's going on. And, you know, we were sitting back in what we call the rec room watching the Star Wars and I was just like, oh my God, is this over? I was not interested. It did not intrigue me. I'm sorry, Star Wars buffs. I know you're fanatics, but I just could not get into it. So
it's totally fine, you know. I mean, but I got to tell you, I went to someone who'd never seen the Star Wars film before. And we had a lot of fun.
Oh, my gosh, really? Yeah. Where'd you go see it?
Just to one of the theaters locally. Uh-huh. And we didn't see it in the 3D or anything. But it was, she thought it was, like, amazing.
Aww.
So I thought, wow, I'm surprised. You know, I didn't think because some people are not into science fiction, like you, for example. Not into space and stuff.
Oh, I know.
You know, but for those who had seen it before, it was a worthwhile film. You know, it was really good. And especially after they made three prequels that kind of sucked, you know. Nobody really liked them.
Right.
So when they came back with this one, I guess it's cool. And they brought back Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher. So that was fun, you know.
Yes. That is one thing I enjoyed about the original Star Wars was Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
He's very attractive man.
Yeah, right? They were so young at the time, right?
Oh, I know.
I know. They're all old. I mean, you saw Luke Skywalker.
Uh-huh.
He was like a kid in the movie. And now he's like an older man, you know.
I know.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So it's, but it's definitely worthwhile. I mean, you know, if somebody wants a good movie and they're not opposed to science, to space stuff,
mm-hmm.
yeah, go see it. But, I mean, you saw all the weird characters and stuff there, right?
Right.
All the, it's pretty out there.
Interesting.
When I think about it.
It is. And we got a new puppy at the ranch.
Oh, really?
Yes. We actually, saved him on the last day before his impending doom of being euthanized. So he was on the, you know, emergency list or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And so we ended up getting him. He's like an Australian cow dog. He's so cute. His name is Jack. So I had fun playing with him when I was back in Texas, too.
Wow, that sounds cute. Yeah. Is he a puppy or?
He's seven months old. So, yeah, he's young. He's really young.
The puppy.
Yeah.
I don't think I've heard of that breed. What is it again? Australian? What?
Australian cow dog.
Oh, what is it? Like, what does it look like?
He's a mutt, but he has, that's his main, you know, breed. And he has spots, and he's little, and you know, spiky ears, and
cute.
I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, did you take any videos or picture of the puppy?
We did. Yeah,
did?
We even got him a little sweater because he doesn't have much fur. And we're just like, this little guy's gonna freeze.
I know,
but it was kind of cool to get a shelter dog.
Yeah, that's
nice.
So
sweet. Yeah, he's so sweet. So
it's nice. Plus, you feel you're doing a noble thing, you know.
Right. That's the best part.
Yeah, saving a dog, saving a life. Mm-hmm. I know. And a lot of people are cool doing that, you know. That's I admire people that do things.
What I can't believe is that...
Hold on a second. Oh, I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yay!
But I think our guest is with us. And we have Dr. Dean Shirzai. Are you on the line with us, Dr. Shirzai?
Yes, we are. Both me and my wife, who is the other Dr. Shirzai as well.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Power well, couple.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you for having us.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, and what's the wife's first name?
My first name is Aisha.
Aisha. Okay. Well, nice having you both.
Yes.
And we appreciate you taking out of your time. I know you guys are busy, doctors and everything. You guys are at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, right?
Yes, we are. Yes.
And so do you guys work together in the same department?
Yeah, we work in the Alzheimer's Prevention Program. I'm the director, and she's in charge of the lifestyle intervention component of the Alzheimer's Prevention Program.
Oh, okay. So we'll talk about that too. But let's start at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about Alzheimer's. What is it, and what does it do to people?
Let me give you some background about this disease. One of the reasons we're coming out on the radios and on the media is because it's an avalanche that nobody knows about. It's the most massive disease hitting our society in a long time. The seven most common chronic diseases of aging, from heart disease, blood pressure, stroke, diabetes, they're all pretty much on decline. Mm. But the one that in the last 10 years alone has gone up more than 70% is Alzheimer's.
Wow.
And it's just actually beginning to climb. And it's related to the aging of society and community for the most part.
Mm.
And what Alzheimer's is a disease of cognition, of thinking. So it robs people of their ability to think, to remember, and slowly over a gradual period of time, takes away all their faculties of thought, and then after a while, their function. So it's a very slow process and painful process. And most of the communities out there don't know about this disease, how to identify it early, and what to do about it.
Right.
So that's why we're on a crusade trying to kind of elaborate on this disease, bring awareness to it, so at least people can identify it early, can get involved in its early treatment, and we'll talk about that, why early identification is important for several reasons.
Right.
And get involved in studies and research and community awareness at a massive level that we need.
Right. Now, I mean, are there like causes for this? Do we know what brings this on?
We don't know the main cause. Many of us think that it's not one disease. You can come to Alzheimer's and dementia. So let me first separate between Alzheimer's and dementia, which is something that's in people's minds. What is Alzheimer's?
Right.
What's dementia?
Right.
Well, dementia is a big category, and that's where any disease that affects thinking to the extent where the person can no longer do some of their activities they could do before. Alzheimer's is one type of dementia, but it's a major form, 60 to 70% or even higher in some series. They say that 60 to 70% of patients with dementia are Alzheimer's dementia. And Alzheimer's dementia is a progressive, degenerative disease that slowly over years basically debilitates the person, and almost always ends up in death.
Right.
Always ends up in death. So, and the causes are multifold. So, but there are risk factors that put you at much higher risk. You know, certain lifestyle risk factors, certain genetic risk factors, even gender, and there seems to be some racial disparities as well. But definitely lifestyle elements such as, you know, diabetes, high blood pressure, those who have vascular risk factors, those who have high, you know, cholesterol, there seems to be a relationship with all of those risk, lifestyle risk factors.
Right.
But above that, there's also genetic risk factors, and then, like I said earlier, gender.
So, so we now know that that women are at a higher risk of developing Alzheimer's disease when compared to men. As a matter of fact, 1 in 6 women after the age of 65 is at a risk of developing Alzheimer's disease compared to 1 in 11 men.
Oh.
So there seems to be some gender disparity as well, and we haven't really figured out what exactly happens in a woman's brain that brings this on.
And it's not related to the fact that women live longer. So even when you control for that, even when you take that into a factor, it seems to be something beyond that as well. So that's something else that we're studying as well.
Wow, that's very interesting. So you guys spend a lot of time researching this stuff, right?
Yes, we see patients and we do research as well here at Peter Simon.
Right. Now, you talked about something about prevention. Prevention and detection. What does prevention mean? I mean, can you actually prevent getting it if you're destined to have it?
I mean, we're not very clear about that. There is no cure for Alzheimer's at this point. Nobody can say that, okay, if you have Alzheimer's and if you do X, Y, and Z, you're guaranteed to cure Alzheimer's. But there's evidence that if you do certain, if you undertake certain lifestyle changes and risk factor reduction, you know, reduce your risk factors, the likelihood goes down. The risk goes down significantly. So there is a relationship between what you can do early on and whether you're going to get it or not and the risk going down. But it's not a one-to-one. So you can't say that, you know, it's not like taking a pill. If I take this pill, I'm not going to get the disease. It's not like that.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we believe that lifestyle has a significant influence on the outcome, at the minimum potentially delaying the disease and then some even potentially abating it and stopping it from ever, you know, avoiding it altogether. So we are very optimistic that some changes that we can undertake early on can affect the community, society in general. Let me give you some idea. So right now, the second leading disease in America, the second costly disease, heart disease, which is $100 billion to the healthcare system.
Mm.
Alzheimer's is more than $200 billion, nearly $250 billion altogether. And that doesn't even take into account the other variables, such as people losing job, you know, their time from work and taking care of their loved ones, all the secondary costs. This number is expected to climb to nearly $3 trillion by 2050, which would be unbearable. You know, our healthcare system or our community and society in general can't bear that cost.
Wow.
So, and we also know that if we undertake certain lifestyle changes and certain interventions, that at the minimum, if we can delay the disease by 5 years, that will reduce the cost by half.
Yeah.
And that's not even speaking to potentially avoiding the disease altogether in many. So we're very optimistic about what we can do just by spreading the news, by spreading information about this massive disease that we don't even have general knowledge about regarding its prevalence and how it shows up. So that's why we wanted to speak about this.
Yeah. Very interesting. Now, I mean, how did you guys become interested in this? I mean, obviously in medicine, there's a lot of fields and everything. Did you have any special interest in this? Why did you choose this of all diseases, let's say?
Sure. Well, for both of us, I think I'm going to speak for Dean here as well. It's a personal thing.
Right.
We both lost 2 grandparents to Alzheimer's disease, and in a very painful way. So Dean lost two of his grandparents, and I lost two of my grandparents.
Wow.
So apart from having the genetic risk factor, just seeing these amazing human beings who were, the matriarch and the head of the family, slowly and gradually lose their memories, lose their personality, to the point where they didn't recognize their parents, their children, and their grandchildren. It was a very painful experience for all of us, and it was just fascinating to see a strong person who took care of everybody just wither to a scared, anxious human being who would get scared of everything and everyone around them and lose their way and be very, very apprehensive about things, and to the point where they would just sit in their bedrooms for hours and hours and never come out. So it was just fascinating growing up as a teenager to see one of our grandparents like that, and we wanted to do something about it. And so that's why.
Yeah.
So, this is, imagine spending the last few years, not minutes, not hours, but years of your life in fear, anxiety, and then with all the healthcare people you go to, not knowing anything about it, not knowing what to do with it. And just because you have the diagnosis of Alzheimer's, just passing you off saying, oh, it's an end-of-life issue. And so that's terrible. I mean, for nearly 5 million people right now having Alzheimer's, they go through this without any major support from anybody, because the healthcare system is not very aware of this disease.
And we saw their caregivers, our parents, go through so much. You know, they had unpaid caregiving hours that were not really taken into consideration. The caregivers' health, they had depression themselves by taking care of their parents for such a long time without any support, without any knowledge of what needs to be done. So we wanted to make a difference, and that's why we're very interested in this disease.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Now, so how can the medical care system, what can be done? I mean, once a person is at that stage, what can be done for them?
Yeah, so first thing is awareness. Knowledge is everything. Knowledge that this is a massive disease, that when you see somebody with memory disorders early on, you just don't pass it off as senior moments. At least get it evaluated. At least send it to a specialist to get a better idea of risks and what can be done. Even if there's nothing that can be done, awareness that this is a disease of cognition. You know, one of the most important things I've done after seeing thousands of patients I've seen is not give them certain medications. It's actually making the patient family aware that the behavior changes that you see is not the person.
Yeah.
It's the disease.
Right.
Just that concept has flipped the script in the life of the family. They no longer blame the person. The aggression, the frustrations actually change towards empathy, because you realize that it's not the person that's actually, you know, pushing back or exhibiting certain behavioral changes or having difficulty doing certain things. It's a disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the change in responsibility. That's one thing. And then the other thing is knowing that this person has Alzheimer's, where are the resources? What are the avenues of care? Educating yourself when you go to the physician, and that actually forces the physicians to get further educated.
Asking the right questions.
Asking the right questions, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Those are critical. And then, of course, come better treatment. When somebody has certain behavior things, you just, the easiest thing is to just throw medicines at them.
Mm.
That's not actually the first option. That's not actually the best option. It's about how to behave, change the environment of the patient who's having these things.
Mm.
And then the next thing, and not the least, it's very important, is getting involved in research. We are at the precipice of potentially finding cures.
Wow.
So we need the community involved in every way possible, from financial support to personal support to getting involved if you have the memory issues, if you have a family member that has the memory issues, because this disease will collapse not just our healthcare system, but our financial system in general, and we need everybody's help.
Yeah, I know. And we were talking about this before we talked to you. You know, my father has Parkinson's, and we also are starting to notice he's not in charge of his faculties anymore. You know, I mean, he's still doing very well, but you see him, like you said, withering away slowly, and, you know, and they just disappear in front of you. And, you know, and we were talking about how memory is so important because it really defines who you are. And I can imagine how painful it must be for a person to really not know who they are anymore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I call it, islands of anxiety and fear. Not everybody has this, but there's a fairly large number of patients with Alzheimer's, especially advanced Alzheimer's and dementia. You said Parkinson's. Let me speak to that. Yeah. There's some evidence that nearly 80% of those with Parkinson's eventually, after 10 to 15 years or 10 years or so, develop dementia.
Yeah.
But the cognitive decline starts much earlier. And with a lot of these dementias, with a great majority of them, anxiety and fear is a part and parcel. It's a part of the disease.
Whoa.
And that is what concerns me most, not just the disease. I mean, at the end of the day, as physicians, we care about the quality of life. And imagine living with fear and anxiety for 10 years. And if the physician's taking care of the patient, don't know about the disease, you know, as soon as you hear anxiety, as soon as you hear some hallucinations, massive drugs, medication is appropriate, but in the, you know, it's important to do it in the right amount, right context, along with support in the family and tools of how to do this. So that's why it's so important to address, even more importantly, the fear and anxiety component that's seen in a lot of these patients.
Wow. And we don't even realize what goes through their minds, you know, because like you said, it's the disease, it's not the person.
Mm-hmm.
And
correct.
Yeah. And so are you saying there's ways to prevent this or reduce the chances of getting it? Aisha?
Yes. So we do, we know from some preliminary data, you know, observational data, which basically means a large group of people that filled out, you know, questionnaires and surveys, say, in the 1960s and 70s and gave a lot of blood and other biospecimens, and they were followed for many, many years, 20 to 30 years. There are a few large databases in the country, and after following these people, you know, we tend to see patterns of diseases and patterns of how lifestyle is associated with diseases. And we now know there's evidence that supports a healthier lifestyle associated with lower risk of developing Alzheimer's disease and dementia. So, for example, you know, in a large study of the Nurses' Health Study, they found out that when people were more active, socially active, if they kept their minds active by engaging in social activities, eating a healthier diet, by exercising on a regular basis, they tended to have less Alzheimer's disease as opposed to those who had a very unhealthy lifestyle.
Wow.
And there are many other databases that support this concept as well.
Yeah.
So that's
interesting. That's,
you know, based on all those accumulated data, we try to disperse this information to everybody, telling them that, you know, a healthier diet that is very high in plant foods, exercising on a regular basis, and sleeping well. Sleep has a big association with dementia. Sleeping well, keeping your mind engaged in social activities, things that you enjoy, reducing stress by relaxation, meditation, and whatnot. These are all very, very important in making sure that the risk of Alzheimer's disease is low, even in individuals who have the genetic markers. So, you know, the lifestyle actually overcomes some of the genetic risk factors.
Oh, that's so interesting. I'm sure people want to know about that. So basically, eat healthy, exercise, go to parties. It'll be okay.
Yeah. So,
yes.
Yeah. So, I mean,
And if you can do all those at the same time, you might not be very good at the party.
Yeah. But you know what? At least there's hope. I think that people, if they find that they can actually do something about preventing or reducing the chances, it's a lot more encouraging than just saying, oh, it's going to happen, you know, regardless of what I do.
Oh, there's amazing data that you can build resilience. You can build what they call reserve, like almost like a bank account. And what it entails is keeping your mind active early on, you know, starting in your 30s, 40s, 50s, as early as possible, keeping physically active, eating a plant-based diet low in sugar, the poison of the 20th century, avoid fried foods and those kind of things. It's critical, and exercising, even weight-bearing exercises. A paper just came out recently, major research article, that in women who did balance and strength training, they had bigger brain volume.
Oh, wow.
They controlled for everything. They did better. So
yeah.
All these things are
That's why
critical.
Kelsey's so smart. You see, she does a lot of this.
Exactly why.
Just from the conversation, I could tell you guys we're bodybuilders. No,
yeah, sure we are.
No, not bodybuilders, but your health. But it's very, very important to promulgate, spread this information out there. I mean, let me give you an example, a very cute example, very interesting example, but it's still scientific, very, very important, the nun study. Uh-huh. I don't know if you've heard about the nun study. So it's a group of nuns that dedicated their time, their life, their writings, even their body after they passed away, they were given to autopsy. And then, so they study all these nuns, and lo and behold, a group of them that were autopsied and their brain was evaluated, it was found that they had severe Alzheimer's pathology, specifically amyloid plaques and tangles and all these markers of Alzheimer's, severe or significant, let's say. They had Alzheimer's pathology. Yet they didn't manifest any of the, you know, visible hallmarks of Alzheimer's, meaning they were cognitively active. They had no significant memory and cognitive issues. They were still active in their community. And they were thrown off because there was another group that had much less pathology, but when they were alive, they had significant evidence of disease. Mm. So what happened? Why did this group that has the pathology did not exhibit the disease in life, yet the other one that had minimal pathology exhibited the disease? And when they looked at their writings, the quality of writings, their vocabulary, their sentence structures and all these things, they saw that the ones that were protected even against the disease, even though they had the disease, had much more complex language, much larger bank of vocabulary, much more active, much more socially, mentally active. So the evidence that was actually a turning point. Although, observational, so you have to take it forward, and they did many other studies since then, there was evidence that people who kept their mind active, physically active, even when they had the disease by pathology, they were protected. Their brain could withstand that pathology.
That's encouraging.
That in itself is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, this is a very deep topic, and you've really enlightened us on a lot of this, you know. And obviously, it boils down to a healthy lifestyle, which is always the case, I think. You know, if you want to prevent disease, you eat well, you exercise. And it's interesting that you say to keep your mind active, you know, because many people maybe don't do that, you know. So,
yeah. So they think keeping your mind active means playing Sudoku.
Right,
which is great if you like Sudoku, but people like me who don't like Sudoku, it's not so great.
Right.
What it means is complex behavior. Complex behavior that, now this is the important part, that you enjoy.
Mm.
You know, yeah. Complex behavior that challenges your memory, problem solving, visual, spatial, attention. What does that mean? Well, starting to learn musical instrument, you know, later in life, trying to learn a second language, trying to learn a new hobby that involves, you know, problem solving, attention. You know, those are the kind of things that really challenge the brain at multiple levels. So that's what that speaks to.
Awesome. Now, how can people get involved? You said that people can help in many different ways. Where can people find out more information about Alzheimer's, about your work? Tell us.
Yeah. This is the Alzheimer's Prevention Program at Cedars-Sinai. So they can contact Cedars-Sinai and ask for the Alzheimer's Prevention Program, and they will be connected. And if they want to be involved, if they want to help out in any way, if they want to volunteer in any way possible, We would love their participation and their input. This is a tremendous battle that we're all undertaking, and everybody's help is needed here.
Right.
So please call Cedar Sinai, ask for Alzheimer's Prevention Program, they will connect you to the right people, and we will, you can join the fight with us.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking the time to give us all this information. And obviously, you're saying you're going on a lot of media and stuff, so you're spreading the word. And I think it's very important because, like you said, you know, I've met people that have family members with dementia, and it's not pleasant. It's not pretty at all. And, you know, I mean, taking all the steps that you mentioned and being involved in everything, I think really is the best way to address this.
So, I hope we can make a difference. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Of course. So Dr. Dean Shirzai and Dr. Aisha Shirzai. And obviously the work, you know, if you want to get in touch, it's the Alzheimer's, what is it again?
Alzheimer's Prevention Program.
Okay, at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, and you guys will find out more information there. Doctors, both of you, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Very interesting. And thank you for really taking the time and devoting your life to this, because obviously somebody has to, and you guys are contributing a lot, and we're grateful to you for that.
It's our pleasure. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day, guys.
You too. All the best. Guys. Bye-bye.
Have a great one.
Bye. Wow.
Oh, my gosh. What a wealth of information they have.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? It's scary stuff, you know. I mean, it really is, you know. I mean, I know somebody whose grandmother has dementia, and she doesn't recognize anybody.
I know.
You know, wow.
It's really sad. But it's encouraging to know that there are things we can do to prevent it, because I think that's the scariest part, is just that feeling of helplessness and impending doom.
Right.
When you have a genetic disposition, or you kind of see the signs coming on or whatever. So, you know, if we can start early, I think is what they're trying to get across to everybody by spreading the word, then that'll be really helpful.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully, awesome. We won't crash the healthcare system with all of the
$3 trillion.
Can you believe that?
2050. Wow, that's a lot of money to spend just on one thing.
It is.
You know,
it is.
Yeah. So, So anyway, the bottom line is live healthy, and
this sugar thing. Yeah. I keep hearing about the sugar thing,
right?
Which is terrible because I love sugar.
I know. That is
like my weakness. And, you know, I'm just thinking, oh, maybe I'll do a little extra weightlifting or cardio or something. So
that's the thing. You're physically active and everything, and so I think you can allow yourself some sugar and some unhealthy things every once in a while.
Every now and then. Yeah. Maybe when I get a little older, I'll try to be stricter. But for now,
Exactly. Enjoy life.
I had a friend one time who just, you know, loved his red meat, and he said, oh, well, I'd rather die with a steak in my mouth than a salad, which I don't advocate, but, you know, whatever makes you happy to some extent.
Yeah, that's true. Now, talking about food, if you guys want to go out on New Year's Eve to Times Square in New York, right?
Oh, my goodness.
You can actually get a deal at the Olive Garden for $400 a person.
What? Oh, hot dang.
So, but it is going to be a party. It's not just a meal.
What are they giving you? Shares?
So there's going to be a DJ, a full buffet. Shares of the company.
I mean, $400.
Well, they have open bar, champagne toast and everything. But I think the bottom line is the location there, you know?
Right.
And you can get a bargain at Applebee's. They're only $350 as opposed to $400.
They better have Cristal.
Right?
I mean, goodness.
But and they don't guarantee a good view of the ball dropping. So yeah, so I don't know what's going on there, but maybe that's a good opportunity to check out the Olive Garden for the first time.
We should have our company party there, Sam. Fly to New York.
I've never been to it, but 400 sounds a little steep.
I know.
You know, but it's crazy. I mean, anywhere you go, on New Year's Eve, they really stick it to you, right?
I know.
Yeah.
I think that we've decided we're going to celebrate before.
Yeah, either that
the day before.
Yeah, or celebrate at somebody's house or something. Have a private party, you know?
Right. That's the best thing to do. Yeah, everything is just astronomical.
Yeah, I mean, you go out on a date, it costs you $500. It's like, come on, man, what is this?
It better be at least like a third date or something. Yeah, right? Yeah, that's it's crazy. They stick it to you, so I would definitely recommend a house party or celebrating on a different day.
On a different day, but that's not the same.
It's not. I know. You want to do the countdown and everything.
Exactly.
So I've done the house party thing the last couple of years in Beverly Hills, so that's been really fun.
Good.
Yeah. Just gone up into the hills and, you know, have it on the TV, the whole New York thing and the champagne.
That's cool, so, with people around and stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll get invited to a party. I don't know. But I usually don't make plans for New Year's Eve, and then it comes around, and you're like, why didn't we make plans, you know?
Right.
So I only think about it 2 days before, and then it's too late.
Exactly. That happens to me a lot of times as well. But luckily, there's an abundance of stuff going on, so you'll find something.
Yeah, definitely. Time. Definitely. But I'm not going to support the restaurants that charge you so much money for
a meal. Don't do that.
There's just no way, man. No way at all. So find other things to do, folks. And maybe then, if not a lot of people go out, then they'll lower the prices or something.
That would be ideal, yes.
Yeah. But I would imagine that it would be, I don't know, I think it would be fun to be at Times Square on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
But it's too many people, you know, I would go crazy.
I don't know, the crowds, I know.
I know, it's too much.
And people are just kind of getting very abundant everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean, even true. San Antonio. Yeah. I can't believe it. The traffic, it almost felt like I was in L.A. Yeah.
Wow.
Of course, I landed at 5 o'clock, around 5 o'clock when I got there. So it was rush hour. But still, I mean, it took a good minute to get home in the traffic, and it never used to be like that.
Yeah.
So, Austin had always been bad. I went to school there and had to deal with that. But San Antonio is newly hazardous when it comes to traffic. So
That's interesting. But yeah, the world is getting very crowded.
It is
a lot of people.
I think maybe it's on my bucket list to go to New York.
Really?
For New Year's Eve. One year, you know.
I know that would be cool, you know. And I mean, I went to New York the last time I was there. We actually landed on Christmas Day, which was amazing because there's nobody out there, and it wasn't that crowded. And then we left the day before New Year's Eve, so we never got a chance to be there at New Year's Eve. But nevertheless, New York during the holidays is just amazing.
I've actually never even been to New York.
Really?
I haven't.
Then
I know.
Need to go.
It's kind of crazy. I've been seemingly almost everywhere else, you know, but not New York. So I need to do that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the need will come up eventually.
It will.
Everybody eventually needs to go to New York.
Right. Maybe I'll get a job there or something.
Yeah.
Have a good reason to go.
Exactly. But it's fun. It's different. You know, it's very different from L.A. Everything is like, you know, everybody walks, subway.
See, that public transportation thing and I are not friends.
Yeah, right?
That's the thing I think I would not like about New York. I know.
Well, you don't have to take subway, you know. I mean, you can take cabs, you know.
It gets
like
expensive,
that,
but, though, huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah, New York is expensive, but you're right. I mean, who wants to take all this public transportation when we're used to our own cars here?
I just like the control of having my own car.
I know. Ugh. And many people in New York do have their own cars, but in the city, it makes no sense to drive a car.
I've heard that.
You know, yeah. It's just so sometimes you'll just walk a few blocks, you know, and so you get to exercise a little bit. That's what I'm saying. You
that
know?
Is good. And get to breathe in that nice polluted air.
Yeah, exactly. You probably see less fat people in New York than here, man. I mean, come on. We're sitting on our ass all day, whether it's in the office, at home, on the couch, in the car.
We do a lot of that.
And they're saying, I keep reading that sitting is more dangerous than smoking.
What?
I mean, can you imagine that?
I can't imagine that, actually. Wow.
Yeah. I don't know who the hell ran that one, but ran that report. But
so light up, folks. It's okay. Just kidding. Yeah, it's not good for you.
But don't sit on your ass. And if you do, do some exercise, at least walk a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, there have been studies coming out that support that forever.
Yeah.
I don't know about the smoking relation, but
But you got to be moving all the time, you know.
Right. Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I remember even one study that came out a while back that says that, you know, even 30 minutes of exercise or whatever, if you've been sitting all day, like, isn't that effective? Like, you need to kind of be moving constantly. So
yeah. I know, that's terrible. And I can tell you, like, movement is very important to the body. You know, like, talking about my dad again, where his body is just diminishing, really, or his ability to move his body. He tries to still walk as much as he can. You
sure.
Know? You got to move your limbs and stuff.
You have to, or else you lose it even quicker.
You do. So, get moving there, folks. And I'm telling myself that, too.
I know.
I'm guilty of all these things.
We need some fitspiration this morning.
Sugar and sitting on my ass and all that stuff, yeah.
Likewise. Especially when people bring us big boxes of donuts.
Yeah, there you go.
Then we're like.
Like last week. Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for today, Kelsey. Another show in the can. We're going to be here tomorrow, folks. We have some great guests tomorrow. We're going to have Sheena Middle, who's a host here, and another host, Susan Olson, who was Cindy of the Brady Bunch.
She's going to be here. Okay.
So we're going to have a lot of fun talk and stuff. So join us tomorrow, please. Thanks always for listening, and see you tomorrow.
Bye, guys.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.